Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to proceed with our sports in the news segment. Scott is running the show for another host on this network today, so it'll just be Aaron and myself. I'd like to begin by reprising a situation we talked about last week, Donald Sterling. What we know is that his accuser, the woman that brought the tape to TMZ, that she is being sued by Mrs. Sterling for $1.8 million for trading sex with the old codger for gifts. That would make her a prostitute. And we know that she illegally recorded that conversation. You cannot record any conversation unless you tell somebody you're doing so and you get their approval. Now it appears that she was engaged in blackmail, which is a federal crime, and that Sterling says, I just should have paid her off. What do you think about that, Aaron?
I think now that Sterling has been banned from the league for life and will likely sell his team after the legal process is over, now the view is kind of shifting towards her to go, okay, so now that the people are satisfied, or seemingly satisfied, with the punishment that he got, they're going to begin talking about if she should be punished. And I think a lot of people are probably going to say, oh, well, it shouldn't be punishable because, you know, she brought up this terrible man.
She's a whistleblower?
Yes.
Yeah, by the way, you know, what the reality is that while Sterling is a creep and while his words are despicable, Sterling's actions have been first rate. I mean, Sterling has was nominated for that Humanitarian of the Year and won the Humanitarian Year Award from the NAACP because he has built so many apartments in African-American regions of Los Angeles in the inner city, because he has donated so much money to African-American charities, because he was the first owner of a NBA franchise to promote a African-American to be president and general manager of that franchise and to stay with him even when he couldn't do the job. And so when you look at his track record is really good as it relates to minority perspectives.
Yeah.
It's just words that are deplorable.
Yeah, as we said last week, the actions speak louder than words. And while at this point everybody's tagging him as a racist, which his comments certainly kind of painted that picture, but now that all of that is over with, there'll be all of his lawyers, I'm sure, are going to try to avoid him having to sell the team. But now the focus is going to shift to her and whether she should be punished or treated as a whistleblower, which I personally think she shouldn't. It's illegal wiretapping, and then if she was blackmailing him, she should be punished fairly harshly for this.
Yeah. So selling sex for gifts, and when you're dealing with $1.8 million worth of gifts and you're having sex with an 80-year-old codger, then, you know, it's pretty hard to say, oh, no, we just had a lovely relationship and he gave me these wonderful presents for no reason at all. But prostitution is also illegal. So she's got prostitution. She's got extortion. She's got blackmail. She's got illegal recordings. And when is the Fed going to say, yeah, guess what? We need to prosecute her because those things are all illegal.
Yeah, I don't think there's a chance they try anything with prostitution. Well, it obviously is, and we can label her as a prostitute. They're not going to go down that road at all legally.
No, but it's true. I mean, you cannot deny that that is what the equation is all about when you're dealing with the 80-year-old guy and this girl that the way that she acts and dresses and being the beneficiary of $1.8 million worth of gifts for that brief period of time.
As far as I'm concerned, if that's what she wants to do with her life and if that's what he's willing to pay, more power to you. But
yeah,
it does speak to her character.
Yeah, I'm personally, I wouldn't make prostitution illegal, just as I wouldn't make drugs illegal. Now, I'm speaking from a position of somebody that the strongest drug that they use is coffee and a glass of wine or a beer with a meal. So I am not a drug user, and I have never engaged in pay for sex. I've never engaged a prostitute in my life. But those things said, I do think that both should be illegal. Should be legal. I think they are victimless crimes, if you even want to call them a crime.
I agree with you 100% on both things.
Yeah. But that being the case, so long as laws exist making prostitution illegal, it's not very hard to paint the case here. And I agree they won't go after for prostitution, but $1.8 million worth of gifts in the short time she was playing girlfriend. It's impossible to come up with a rational explanation for that is anything other than she was a prostitute. Next story I'd like to cover with you, it came out today. It's a subject that is near and dear to my heart because I despise this organization. I think it's amongst the most unethical organizations in the world. Cleveland, Ohio. Jim Brown. For those who do not know Jim Brown, he is one of the greatest players in the NFL and all of NFL history, a great running back, also a great actor. I mean, he's a remarkable individual in terms of what he's been able to accomplish in his life. Anyway, Jim Brown is not a fan of the NCAA, a truth made evident on Sunday at the Pro Football Hall of Fame FanFest. I sent you an article. Why don't you share what Jim Brown, and tell me if you agree. I think that Jim Brown is an extraordinary individual in terms of what he's been able to do in his life, being a public spokesperson, being a first-rate movie actor, and being one of the greatest running backs in the history of the league.
Yeah, Jim Brown was a fantastic athlete, and by pretty much all accounts I've ever seen, a pretty good guy on top of that. So
yes.
I certainly have no ill will towards him. So he was on, I believe it was ESPN,
yeah,
with Barry Sanders, who was another great running back, and Harry Carson. It was on Larry King. That's what it was. So
okay.
He came out, and they were discussing the NCAA. And Jim Brown said this: "The NCAA is probably the most reprehensible organization God ever created. Total exploitation, that kind of money they make, that kind of life they live, it's embarrassing." Now, what this was referencing was that the college players receive no compensation for playing other than probably room and board and scholarships, which that's not nothing, but a lot of them aren't there to learn, they're there to play.
Yeah, in fact, that was his answer to a direct question about the scenario of it's the same, it's the genre that you're talking about here, but he was asked a direct question about, you know, what about the football player that is playing in his sophomore year and is injured, and he receives no compensation from the NCAA, no compensation from the school, he's not able to play for the NFL. And therefore he doesn't even have an insurance policy provided by the NCAA. What about that? And that's when he came out with this most reprehensible organization God ever created. By the way, I didn't notice in the bylaws of the NCAA that God had a role in creating it.
Does it say that?
No, I don't. No, as a matter of fact, I know at the Pac-10, when they were Pac-10, they wanted to become a Pac-12. They wanted Texas to join, and Texas says, "Yeah, we'll come, but we want Baylor to join us." And the Pac-10 at the time said, "If it means taking Baylor, we don't even want Texas." And of course, the next year Baylor was in the top 10 team in football, top 10 team in men's basketball, won the women's title in basketball, and produced a Heisman Trophy winner. And academically, is ranked above more than half of the Pac-10, now Pac-12 schools. But The fact that it was a Christian college, it was something that the Pac-12 wanted to snub their nose at. So I am quite certain that there is no association between God and the NCAA.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure he was trying to imply that in that way.
Yes.
It's a pretty common thing for sports players to
bring
that into it.
But the fact is that that he made the statement that the NCAA is the most reprehensible organization ever created. And then he said, I am totally for change and for total change. Now, he said, I wanted to sound as harsh as I could because I want them to come at me in any way they want to, because it's a shame the way that this all happens. I happen to agree with him. I think that when it comes to not paying the players in men's basketball and football, those are the only two sports. Football is responsible for about 90% of most universities' earnings in sports, and men's basketball is responsible for about 95% of the NCAA's earnings because they put on the tournament. Now, the problem, though, is that if you were to pay the men's basketball players and the men's football players, which are generating all of the revenue, from that point on, it's all a negative. All other sports, every women's sport, and all the rest of the men's sports lose money. They're funded by the prosperity of men's football and men's basketball. So do you pay the those that actually generate money for the university and not pay the athletes on teams that don't generate money for the university? And then what do you do with Title IX?
I would say that's exactly what you do. You pay the sports that generate money for your university, and you don't pay the ones that don't.
Okay, the U.S. government won't allow that because it's not into fairness. It imposed Title IX, which says that, you know, if you've got a men's football team, then and if you've got 150 boys on scholarship for that team, then you must have 150 women's scholarship recipients, even if they're costing the university a fortune by playing broom hockey. So now how do you deal with that? The government's imposed Title IX. Universities can't opt out of it. Welcome back to Saturday Miss. The reason that this is a story in the news is that the NCAA has a huge influence on colleges and universities. As a matter of fact, because of the government's interference with Title IX, rather than having a slight majority of college students being male, now women make up over two-thirds and sometimes up as high as 70% of college students. We've changed society in a very fundamental way. And because of Title IX, it's almost impossible now to straighten out athletics. I mean, it really should be the case where you can receive a scholarship where the university is providing you with food and lodging and your education for free. And I think they should also be paying the men that play basketball and football, because they're making millions and millions for the schools and for the NCAA. To have them contribute without any compensation, that's involuntary servitude. It's not involuntary. They sign up for it, but it is still a form of slavery. And I think it's grossly inappropriate. So I know the majority of Americans, by the way, side here with the NCAA. They think that these student-athletes get more than what they should get in terms of a free academic ride. And you know, I think that for women's broom hockey or for men's water polo, that's probably true. You know, for the men's golf team in terms of scholarship, yeah, they're getting more than they're contributing. But not in football, not in basketball. What do you think?
I would agree with that. I think the only solution to this would be to get rid of Title IX, which is a massive, massive undertaking if they try to do that.
Correct. And then you've got the this other issue with the NCAA, which is that they are on the big money event, which the big money event is football. In football, they are grotesquely immoral, hypocritical. You know, for example, the USC was essentially given the death penalty by the NCAA for having a player that had whose father received benefits in San Diego from a guy that wasn't even an agent, and yet they all but destroyed USC's football program. And yet the head of the NCAA at the time, Emmert, was athletic director at the University of Miami, where boosters were paying football players boatloads of cash, just handing it out to them. And yet Miami, because Emmert botched the investigation, got nothing as a penalty. And there's something grotesquely wrong with that scenario.
Yes, there most certainly is.
You know, you've got the Johnny Football, the kid at Texas A&M. He signs thousands of autographs for money, and he is the punishment is that he missed one half of one football game when you've got USC, by comparison, forfeiting scholarships, 10, 15 scholarships a year, year after year. Those things don't equate. You've got, it was the Cam Newton, the quarterback, that was thrown off of University of Florida's football team. Now, to get thrown off the University of Florida's football team, I mean, you really got to be bad, because at one time they had 30 criminals on that, on their national championship team. They threw him off. And yet his father then was soliciting other SEC teams to play for and was asking those teams for $250,000 to sign his son. And yet Auburn won a national championship with him, and the NCAA doesn't even want to investigate.
I believe Terrell Pryor also had some legal issues, and his response was to just go pro.
Yes. And this is an organization that's so out of whack, so out of control, so grotesquely immoral, and it's affecting universities, which is where our children are being, I want to say, educated, but really indoctrinated. This is not a productive or moral association at a place where we ought to have a great deal more morality than what we're getting from the NCAA.
Well, and one of the main issues I see with how you said most of society seems to side with the NCAA, when we say they're not getting reimbursed for their play, people will say, oh, but they're getting scholarships to these colleges. But the vast majority, particularly the ones that are going on to the NFL, they're not there for the scholarship. They don't care. They're there so that they can go on and make more money playing the sport later in life.
It's absolutely true, and it is a severe problem, and it's all about money and who's making the money, and the fact that they're able to get essentially free labor to make billions of dollars ought to be a concern to people. Of course, in the news hour, Scott normally is a part of this discussion, but he is monitoring the Alex Jones show as we speak. And so we have Aaron, who is responsible for producing the Shattering Myths show, with us. Our next subject is going to be the subject that just dominated the sports headlines and has kind of quietly gone into oblivion. But it's the disagreement between Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito. For just a bit of introduction, both players were linemen for the Miami Dolphins, and they're said to be best friends. But then they began to exchange texts. I think some 1,000 of them have been subsequently published, and it became a big scandal with Jonathan Martin claiming that he was harassed and bullied by Richie Incognito and others of the Miami Dolphin. You want to kind of share a little more background on the story with us, with our listeners, Aaron?
Yeah, so this was back in October, November, around that time. And what happened was Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito, like you said, were known to be very good friends. They had spent a lot of time outside of the practice and games together. And one day, Jonathan Martin stopped showing up for work. And they called him and he said, "Oh, I've been being bullied by the whole team," and singled out Richie Incognito as the main bully. And so that became a big story in the national media, and Richie Martin was just absolutely raked over the coals for it.
Richie Incognito.
So that happened, and then slowly more information kept coming out. And they released the text log, and it showed that they were very very colorful in their language to each other, but it was a common thing. Because originally they were saying, "Oh, he's..." Excuse me. They said, "Oh, he threatened to kill my mom," and just a variety of things that, when read in context in the text, are, it's their form of communication. It's an odd one, but it just comes off as immature. Taken out of context, it sounds much worse than it is.
Yeah, in fact, Jonathan Martin's lawyer, very early on in the process, released a audio recording, a voicemail from Richie Incognito, that used the N-word, which is what caused Incognito to be immediately suspended from the team. I think he went six games without pay, and he was never allowed back on the field because in a text message he used the N-word. But they were using the N-word back and forth with one another routinely, both in audio recordings, phone recordings, messages, and in texts.
Yeah, the way that they spoke with each other, that was completely normal to each other. A lot of it was taken out of context. I remember another headline was that, "Oh, he said he's going to kill his family." Well, that sounds pretty serious until you realize that he said that in the form of a picture message known as a meme, with a picture of some silly dog and then the text above and below the image. I mean, it was a bit ridiculous that they took that out of context.
Oh, of course. He was never threatening to kill his family or rape his sister or any of that sort of thing. They were sending cartoon illustrations and you know, the comments, you know, like, "Well, I'm going to blow huff and puff and blow your house down if you don't show up at the meeting tonight. Well, if you do that, then, you know, I'll do this disgusting thing to your mother." And it's they were immature, overpaid, child men acting worse than most children.
Yeah, and that was the nature of their relationship. They would go and they would hang out and go to bars and strip clubs and say stuff like that to each other. It's immature, but when you place, when that's the lifestyle that they're used to, that's between them. So for Jonathan Martin to then come out and say, "Okay, now I have a problem with it," and he just stopped showing up to work and not even text Incognito back or anything, he was surprised.
Now, I'm going to risk exposing the fact that I'm old and that I'm out of touch with today's culture by what I'm going to say. But and feel free to hammer me on this, Aaron, if you disagree. I don't think the problem is the culture of the NFL and the fact that you've got overly paid boys with way too much testosterone going at it and being foul-mouthed with one another, talking inappropriately to one another. I think we have a very significant problem in young people today in our society, particularly with these forms of social communication, whether it is Facebook or it is texting one another or it is tweets or my youngest son, he's a grad student and a teacher at a university. And he says there's a new anonymous forum that is centered on geographic areas where people can communicate anonymously. And he says he heard about it the other day and he decided he would read it in his community. He said most of the communications are as raunchy as what these two were communicating. It's all about sex and drunkenness and drugs and body parts, and says, you know, the community, this is now, this is a Christian college. And yet it is, the conversations are absolutely reprehensible.
I am familiar with the, I believe it's an app that you were speaking
yes.
of. I do not
yes,
know the name
that.
Of it, but it's only a month or two old, because I remember immediately it came out, and somebody, I think it was a bomb threat or something of that nature, mm-hmm. which then the police went, okay, let's go, and they trace back to who did it. Because it is anonymous, but if you put any effort into it, it's not terribly anonymous.
Right.
I would agree with you mostly. I'm not sure it's the social media aspect. I think it's just the internet. If you give people a forum where they can say whatever they want, particularly younger people, the first thing they're going to say is the most ridiculous thing they can think of for more of an attention-grabbing thing. Again, I would agree with you, but it's not. They have no intention of doing any of this stuff, but they have an anonymous forum. I'm going to say whatever I want, even if I don't believe it, even if I don't agree with it, even if I'm not going to do it. And that is definitely a culture thing.
Even if I'm not completely drunk, which is the reason I'm saying that I'm not getting up and going to school this morning, is I was too drunk last night to do this. The fact is that it's just a it's a internet medium with anonymity, and they're playing their part.
The drunk one, they might have been. I went to the University of Minnesota for 2 years, and that was a very big part of the culture, was, especially with the incoming freshmen, the party culture was very real.
You know, I'm trying to sell a house that's near the University of California, Santa Barbara, and I'm going to be within 5% of being accurate here. I think the STD, sexual transmitted disease, percentile amongst the students there is somewhere between 65 and 70%. You know, when you are in a situation like that, it's more than just talk. We have a significant problem of degrading morality.
I would agree with that, and especially with colleges, with dorms. I'm gonna say dorms are one of the biggest offenders, because one of the things you'll hear about dorms very often, and I was told it many, many times when I was deciding where to live going into college, and they said, oh, live in the dorms, you'll never get that experience again. You live on campus, you're surrounded by other 18-year-olds coming in, mm-hmm. probably moving out of the house for the first time. Well, that giving 18-year-olds their first sense of freedom on a college
right.
campus, that's going to breed exactly what you think it's going to breed.
Particularly with sex, drugs, and alcohol.
Exactly.
And also violence. I mean, it is a mix of all of those things. They're destructive violently, destroying both property and harming one another. They're way, way overly alcoholed. There's way too many drugs. And there's much, much too much sex to be in an environment where you have respect for one another. I mean, God doesn't say a lot about non-marital sex, so it's not one of my hot buttons. But there is a point where where young people are having sex in lieu of actually engaging in a relationship. And I think that is extraordinarily corrosive to really the most important thing that we can do as people, which is develop relationships with one another, caring, mutually beneficial relationships. And you're not going to get that if sex is your priority.
And I'm going to piggyback on that comment for a second. With that, usually, I mean, it starts with the drugs and alcohol and
yes.
what do drunk and high people do. They
right.
violence and have sex.
Right.
But another part of it, and this was probably my biggest pet peeve on campus, is that there's a lot of political correctness and a lot of don't judge me for whatever I'm doing.
Right.
I have every right to judge you if I want. That's what I do.
Yes.
So
yeah, you know, this idea that you shouldn't be judged and you can't, and that, by the way, is constant. I mean, I heard my son must have said that 1,000 times, that he heard somebody say, don't judge me. And the person that was asking not to be judged was engaging and he would never view marijuana, which he does not use, but he wouldn't view marijuana as a drug. I mean, using hard drugs, being drunk routinely and just drinking for the purpose of drinking, constantly having unprotected sex with boys and girls, both sides, that people didn't even know. and then gloating about things that they had destroyed, violent acts or fights that got into, and said, don't judge me.
Yeah, the college campus is the worst that I've personally seen it, but everybody has to be very politically correct in what they say and do, but nobody wants anybody to judge them for anything. So it's, I can have sex with as many people as I want. Yes, you can, but I'm going to apply whatever thoughts I have about that to you.
Right.
Because that, it speaks to your character.
Correct. Yeah, it's, you are free to drink, so long as you're not caught, I guess you can do as much drugs as you want. I think you should be free to do as many drugs as you want. Your choice to affect your ability to think. You know, alcohol and drugs both influence your ability to process information, and they hugely influence your ability to make good decisions. That your propensity to do that, as far as I'm concerned, would hugely diminish my view of such an individual.
Yep, and it all goes back to bring them onto a college campus and let them have all the freedom that they want. And you're not going to be able to stop that, but it's going to breed a certain type of culture.
Yeah, I'm going to go one step further. I think that that the university environment is actually encouraging it. I think that politically correctness, which says that we should not execute good judgment, that we shouldn't be discerning, we shouldn't be, that being moral is unfair to judge people by a moral standard, that you put all those things together, and I think we're actually encouraging, the institution is encouraging destructive behavior. Welcome back to Saturday Mess. It may sound like we chased a rabbit here and went from Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito in a alleged bullying incident to what's happening on college campuses and young people and social media. But there's really a direct tie between them, which is that this is the behavior that Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito at their respective universities were engaged in. This was the not only permissible but encouraged at these universities, and they simply continued to behave as they were behaving as special students on their as part of their college football teams and all of the entitlements that they receive as part of those programs. And so it's a natural extension of prior behavior. You know, I even think it ties into our first story, Aaron, with woman who is who put together the tape on Donald Sterling. You look at the way people are responding. Here's a woman that extorted money from this guy by probably a prostitute based upon their sex for gifts, who illegally wiretrapped him and then I blackmailed him with the tape. And no one is accusing her of anything.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that they will start to, and it seems like that may be the case going forward. But up to this point, nobody has put any wrongdoing on her. Yeah. It's all been on him.
Yeah, what do you think the chances are of these young people who are engaged in getting drunk on a regular basis, I mean, drinking for the purpose of getting drunk, using drugs for the purpose of withdrawing from reality, are using sex, engaged in sex with people they do not even know on a regular basis, and that are destroying property, acting violently as part of all of that. What do you think the chances are that they get out of the university experience unscathed, and that they all live wonderfully productive lives, contribute to some business and stay married for long enough to raise their children, that they leave all of this behind them and they're unscathed by it?
I will say that actually a higher number of the people that I came into contact with seem to have done that, but it's a lower number than it would have been had the culture been different in college.
So the college culture is having a negative impact on society. Now, I saw that, which is why I'm not in business anymore. I saw that over the course of the 30 years that I was in business, each decade, the caliber of individual that I could hire, the character of individual deteriorated to the point where I went from 90% of the people that I was able to employ being morally responsible to 80 to 90% more being morally irresponsible changed over 30 years as a direct result of what they were exposed to in universities. So I think there is a significant spillover. What do you think?
I would say that that's most likely true, that the college experience is much different than what it probably was 30 years ago. The college experience now, from what most people think going in, is, okay, I'm going to go, I'm going to meet all these new people, and we're going to party all the time for 4 years. And then by the end of it, then they've been partying for 4 years, and they may stop and they may not stop, and it definitely changes people.
Yeah, when I was in school, and I went to a school that we did our share of partying. I was in a fraternity, and that was a significant aspect of my college experience. But we studied together. We played sports together. We developed really very close personal relationships with one another, acted as a large family, as brothers. You know, I left that environment much closer, feeling a bond with people. And in fact, I probably learned more about how to conduct oneself in life to work with people in the fraternity than I did in my classes in the university. And I just think of how different my experience was before political correctness came to dominate our universities than what young people are experiencing today.
Yeah, what the political correctness has led to is the judgment-free culture. The I can do whatever I want, and you can't tell me that I'm wrong. You combine that with the fact that these are all 18-year-olds that have just moved out of the house, and they're going to be doing whatever they want, which probably isn't the greatest thing for them in the long run.
Brilliant statement. Judgment-free culture. When we stop exercising good judgment, we cease to be moral. We cease to be civil. We are incapable of being just. Everything begins to disintegrate when we are in a judgment-free culture. We can't even differentiate between right and wrong, good and bad.